This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
West Virginia has it. 3 seconds. Down two. Johnson, three for the win. Oh, he missed it. It grazed the side of the iron. And Maryland escapes onto the second round. 67-65. The Terrapins outlast the Mountaineers in a thriller to get us started today in Birmingham, Alabama.
Man, I thought that was going in. And I would guess that the majority of Maryland people thought it was going in as well. By the way, Denton, that was a much better call. That was the Westwood 1 call, I'm assuming, right?
Correct. That was Westwood 1.
Yeah. Westwood 1 call, much better call than we got from Nance Hill and Raftery. That was one of the worst broadcasts of a really exciting, you know, basketball game that I've heard in a long time. More on that coming up. Good morning. Maryland beat West Virginia in a game, in the first game of the NCAA tournament's first round. March Madness underway, and it was crazy in the afternoon session for sure yesterday. We'll get to the Virginia loss. We'll get to the Arizona loss. Princeton and Furman are the darlings after day one. But the Maryland-West Virginia game, that was a brawl from the jump. I mean, it was expected, but my God, it was even more than I thought it would be. Both teams back and forth, throwing haymakers at each other. This was pure contact sport yesterday. The screens were violent. The box outs were total scrums. Each defense doing whatever it could to totally disrupt the other team's offense, even if it included fouling a lot. There were 43 fouls called in the game. By the way, it could have easily been twice that, but the game would have lasted 4 hours and there would have been no players left. I mean, if you like pretty, if you like dainty, this one was not for you. I loved it. And while I would have been crushed if Maryland had lost to West Virginia, I would have still been able, I think, to acknowledge that that game was damn good. If you love competition at the highest level, desperate competition, really good win for the Terps. Much more coming up on this one in a few minutes. I will do a mini recap of the game. Things I liked, things I didn't like, with a couple of other observations. Maryland moves on. They get the number one seed in the tournament in Birmingham, Alabama. They are 8.5-point underdogs in that game, and that game is the final game of Saturday night. 9:40 tip time estimated, depending on what time the first game in Birmingham goes. By the way, Auburn will be playing in Birmingham as well. They beat one of my Final Four teams, Iowa. What a joke that was. Sheehan having Iowa in his Final Four. They are out. They made an unbelievable comeback. I don't know, Denton, if you were watching that game. They were down by 18, 17, and they got it all the way back down to 4. I thought they were going to win the game. They didn't, and that was a smell test pick gone badly. 2-4, I think, was the smell test yesterday. I know what I was personally once the day got started, and it wasn't pretty. Maryland was a winner. San Diego State barely a winner. UVA, Illinois, Iowa, and Tennessee. God, they were up by 18, and they ended up winning by 3. So they didn't cover as well. I'll have another smell test today. If you want it, I'll have another smell test of picks. There's some games today that I love. A wild day. Certainly the Maryland game was a good one. But I was going to mention, sorry, that Auburn is playing in Birmingham on Saturday night as well. After they knocked off Iowa, they will play Houston in Birmingham before Maryland plays Alabama. I think it would have been better for the Terps if they had been the first game, because maybe they could have gotten some Auburn fans to root for them against Bama. But after Auburn either beats Houston or loses to Houston, they might be out of that arena. We'll see. But 9:40 on Saturday night right here. Pregame will start right around 9:15, 9:20, somewhere around there here on your home for Maryland basketball, the Team 980. 9:40 against Bama. They played Bama in the second round 2 years ago after beating UConn in the first round, and it was a one-sided beatdown. Now, Alabama is, you know, an excellent basketball team. They have probably the, you know, the best player or one of the two or three best players in Brandon Miller in the country. He only played 19 minutes in that game yesterday, an easy win over Texas A&M Corpus Christi. Apparently, he's got some aggravated hamstring issues. He was 0 for 5 and did not score in the game, and yet they still won by 21. Anyway, more on the Maryland game coming up. By the way, Kevin Willard will join us at 7 a.m. Kevin Willard from Birmingham at 7 a.m. this morning. Gary Williams will jump on with us at 7:40. We'll talk and get Gary's thoughts on the Maryland win and the rest of the day in the tournament as well. Ben Standig will join us at 8, and as we continue talking tournament, we'll have somebody on from Alabama talking about the Crimson Tide towards the end of the show. But yesterday, man, the tournament did what it always does. It delivers. This was the wild ending to Virginia and Furman.
Gonna get, and then make free throws if you force them to foul.
Well, the Cavaliers are playing with four guards, and the four guards out there, along with Cedric, are their best free throw shooters.
Clark in a straight jacket.
Oh, he didn't need to do that!
He threw it away! Hing, Pegues! Goal! Furman leads! Timeout, Virginia!
Wow. I don't know what to say. I flipped it right as that happened because the Maryland game had ended just about a minute earlier. Virginia had a four-point lead, and Kihei Clark, who has been everything to that program over the last several years, Kihei Clark missed a free throw, too, that could have given them a five-point lead with about 19 seconds to go. And then after two free throws, by the way, it was a very close call on what looked like a block shot with about 12 seconds to go, but they called a foul, sent Furman to the free throw line down four. They made both. And then you just listen to the call of that. It was Kihei Clark, I think, you know, trapped in the corner. They had a timeout. He had a timeout he could have used. The jump ball would have gone Furman's way, but I think he completely lost track and thought if he threw the ball down the court and it traveled through the air long enough that the clock would pretty much run out. But he was way off on timing, and Pegues took the pass after the intercepted pass that was an easy intercepted pass and knocked down that three. Virginia got a Beekman three-pointer at the buzzer that missed, and a 13-over-4 in the first window of yesterday. And Virginia is out in the first round for the third time in their last four tournaments. The first round in three of their last four tournaments. Now, the other tournament they were in, they won the whole thing. But they lost, obviously, to UMBC, as we remember, in that final, in that shocking 16-over-1. And we also had, after the national championship, they lost in the first round as well in that tournament. That was the let me just pull that up.
Kevin, didn't that Kihei Clark thing feel eerily reminiscent to the Michael Ruffin play against Toronto with the Wizards like 10 years ago, 10, 15 years ago? You know what I'm talking about?
Vaguely.
where Michael Ruffin threw the ball up, and I think it was Mo Peterson caught it, and then
I do remember. But that was a regular season game.
It was regular season.
Yeah, yeah. I thought you were going back to the Toronto playoff series because they played Toronto twice. No, you're right. I do remember that play. Virginia had the COVID year after the championship, and then they lost in 21 in the first round. They were in the NIT last year, but their last four trips have included three first-round exits as a very highly seeded team. There's a lot of discussion about Tony Bennett after the loss yesterday. Pat Forty, a longtime college basketball and college football writer, for that matter, wrote a story yesterday for Sports Illustrated titled "Virginia's Upset Loss to Furman Further Proves 2019 National Title Was a Complete Fluke." The style of play has obviously been a criticism of Tony Bennett for, many years now. They keep, that style of play can keep both teams in the game, and it creates a smaller margin for error. Tony Bennett, if you're wondering, Tony Bennett has won everywhere he has gone. He's got a 16-10 overall tournament record. Obviously, that means that the six-game run for their national championship in 2019 is what put him over the hump in terms of being better than a 500 tournament record. But he's won at Virginia 73.5% of his games and 70% of his ACC games. I mean, you got to be kidding me. Style of play, if you don't want to go play for Tony Bennett because you don't like the style, that's fine. He will win with whomever he has because that's all he's ever done. Virginia was a program that, to me, was an underachiever for years, following really the Jeff Jones years in the early to mid-90s. They were an underachiever with one coach after another. Tony Bennett arrives in Charlottesville in 2009, and all he's done is won. They've won six ACC regular season championships. Are you kidding me? This team, Virginia's become a top 10 to top 15 program, worst case. If I were a UVA fan, And anybody suggested maybe it's time to move on, I'd literally drug test them. Tony Bennett is a great basketball coach. There are lots of ways to do it. And look, three early exits. And look, the exit yesterday was flukish. Their best player, their smartest player, had the ball in his hands and made an absolutely inexplicable play, throwing the ball down the court instead of using a timeout and throwing the ball inbounds again and getting fouled and going to the lineup too. I mean, that was a flukish loss. There's no other way to describe that particular loss, really, if you're being fair. It was quite remarkable, the game yesterday and the way that ended, but the reaction to it blows me away. Virginia lost to Ohio University in the first round by 4. That wasn't a great loss, and certainly the UMBC loss is the one that really hangs over Bennett's head. But he did win a national championship, and you can say, well, that national championship, man, they could have easily lost several times along the way. Yeah, they could have. They could have lost to Purdue. They could have lost to Oregon. They certainly could have lost to Auburn and then to Texas Tech, but they didn't. God, they had a lot of close games in that tournament run, didn't they? A lot of great basketball games. By the way, a lot of games in which the point totals were un-UVA-like. The championship game was 85-77 in overtime. The game over the Purdue game was something like 80-something to 80-something, wasn't it? The game where Carson Edwards went for 42. By the way, the best game of the tournament that year was the Purdue win over Tennessee in the Sweet 16. That was a ridiculous game. Anyway, UVA loses. They are out. I'm not on board with the Tony Bennett can't do it and 2019 was a flukish run. The tournament delivered all day yesterday. This was the number two seed, Arizona, in big trouble against Princeton.
Capper. No good. Arizona with a prayer that will not go. And the Tigers of Princeton growl their way into round two as they upset the number two seed Wildcats of Arizona.
I forget if I mentioned this to you yesterday. I didn't pick Princeton to beat Arizona. I kind of liked them plus the points. Didn't take them because the action was split, so it didn't fit the smell test. But I mentioned to you or Tommy on my podcast, I forget, Arizona was the youngest team in the field going into this thing. And they had a couple of games and losses that were interesting during the course of the year. I thought they were a good team. I didn't think they'd lose to Princeton. They gave up 9 straight to end that game, and they were rattled during that run. And, you know, the Princeton now gets a second iconic tournament moment, if you remember when they upset UCLA back in 1996. And Arizona becomes the first program to lose twice as a 2 seed to a 15 seed. It happened back in 1992 when they lost to Steve Nash. Was that Steve Nash? It wouldn't have been Steve Nash. But they lost to Santa Clara in 1992. That was pre-Nash, I believe. Arizona out. Princeton on to the next round. Furman also on to the next round. Furman gets San Diego State in a second-round game. I watched them for maybe the second time this year. Man, they are big and physical and nasty, San Diego State is. I don't think that you know, will translate to more than another win because ultimately they'll end up playing somebody like Baylor in the Sweet 16. Meantime, Princeton moves on, and they, after their upset win, they will get Missouri. Missouri looked really good in their win over Utah State that game on Saturday. Some good setups for Saturday. The Houston-Auburn game really looks like a very interesting 1-9 game. Houston's banged up. Sasser's banged up. Houston struggled with Northern Kentucky late last night. That could be a very interesting game. I haven't looked at that point spread yet, Denton. I'm pulling that up right now because I bet that is a shorter line than we think it's going to be. No line on the game because of Sasser. Not yet. No line on that game yet. Maryland down to 7.5 now. Alabama just a 7.5-point favorite is the number one seed in the entire draw. By the way, Maryland will definitely be an anti-public play as they were yesterday. They will be again late Saturday night. Fun day in the tournament yesterday, especially the Maryland game for me, but the Princeton UVA, the Princeton win, the Furman win. Howard, you know, didn't have a chance. We didn't think they had a chance. They actually were competitive for the first 10, 12 minutes of that game. Illinois was a big disappointment for me. So was Iowa. The Big Ten ends up going 2-2 on day one of the tournament. I'm sorry, they end up going 3-2 on the first day of the tournament. Northwestern got a win. Maryland got a win. And Penn State, by the way, that kid Funk, 8 of 10 last night from behind the arc, and they blew out Texas A&M last night. Illinois, so sloppy. By the way, you know, remember when early in the year, I think we had this discussion about how Coleman Hawkins just looks like he's going to be an excellent player and an excellent NBA player. He sleptwalked through half of that game. I think he was personally responsible for 6 turnovers in that game. And then Iowa just got outshot in the second half. Auburn went nuts knocking down 3s there for a stretch in the second half, and it was a dunk show at times for them, too. UCLA looked really, really good, winning by 33 as a 2 seed. And again, Tennessee had a big lead against Louisiana, which was a popular upset pick. They were up 18. They ended up, you know, hanging on and winning by 3, not even coming close to covering. And Texas looked good routing Colgate yesterday. Good day one. Another big day coming up today. 16 games. Looking forward to several of them. We'll get to those a little bit later on. But when we come back, I'm going to do a Washington Commanders Redskins Skins style recap of the Maryland West Virginia game. This was truly a brawl from the start, and it was entertaining, and it was a big win for the Terps, especially considering the opponent. More on that when we come back. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Team 980.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.
All right.
What do you got?
All right, I'm going to get to a Maryland West Virginia recap here coming up, but there was a report yesterday or last evening that the Snyders, the headline, and it's from Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio, with the sale of Commanders believed to be imminent, the Snyders have cleared out of the facility. And per multiple sources, Florio writes, Dan and Tanya Snyder have cleared out of the team's facility in advance of the sale of the team. As one source explained it, they left in late December. We're also told that within the building, the word being used is that the potential sale is, quote, imminent, closed quote. Multiple sources said that a sale could be approved and announced as soon as the upcoming league meetings in Arizona. This is, they've been clearing out for a while now. I don't know that for a lot of us this is, you know, major breaking news, but still it is another indication. And as I've mentioned about Florio, even though he gets a lot of stuff wrong, and by the way, what's interesting is to go through his timeline of stories about the Commanders, he did finally say the signing of Jacoby Brissett likely takes Commanders out of play for Lamar Jackson. No, not likely, definitely. And it was definitely even before Jacoby Brissett. And he was riding that one hard, the Lamar Jackson to Washington conversation. But I do think that a lot of the latest signs point to perhaps a conclusion sooner rather than later. By the way, start thinking about how we're going to handle all of this. This will be the biggest sports story in this town in, you know, many, many years. Certainly since the Nats won the World Series and the Caps won the Stanley Cup. And in many ways, you can say it will impact more people in terms of the volume of people that will be not only interested, but very thrilled with the news. I've been thinking about this a lot, by the way, because we're going to have, you know, there will be a couple of days of looking back, looking forward, celebration, but I don't know about overdoing it. I think we got to act like we've been there before. These are people that are involved, but man, this will be one of the greatest days in the history of this town when it happens. By the way, Wes Schweitzer gone, signs with the Jets. Also, quarterback carousel continues. Marcus Mariota to Philadelphia on a 1-year, $5 million deal with incentives that could pay him $8 million if he ends up playing, if Jalen Hurts were to get hurt again. And then Gardner Minshew to the Indianapolis Colts. So that happened. I've not seen the money on that yet, Denton. I don't know if you have at this point. I am interested to see what Minshew gets from Indianapolis. Minshew will obviously be there to back up whomever they draft, or to perhaps start until the rookie quarterback that they draft is ready to play. By the way, also the Eagles, they keep Darius Slay. It looked like a few days ago that he was leaving. 3 years, $42 million for Darius Slay. So he gets $14 million a year, $23 million of it guaranteed. So they've got Bradbury and Slay continuing as their starting corners. And also, I did think it was interesting that Drew Lock, you know, was out there as a potential free agent. We didn't talk a lot about Drew Lock before Brissett was signed. And, I mean, for me, the reason I didn't consider it is if you were to sign Drew Lock, Drew Lock's not coming here to mentor anybody. He's not coming here to be, you know, a great guy in the quarterback room. I'm not saying that he wouldn't be, but he's in his third or fourth season now. He wants to play. He wants to start. But he did re-sign in Seattle to continue to back up Geno Smith. Man, it has been a busy week in the NFL. And we've got more NFL coming up next hour. We will talk about yesterday's pressers for Jacoby Brissett, Taylor Heinicke in Atlanta, and Andrew Wiley, Washington's new offensive lineman from Kansas City, had something interesting to say about Eric Bieniemy. So we'll play all of that for you coming up next hour. Ben Standing will be with us at 8. But once again, Pro Football Talk reporting, more important than the Snyders have cleared out the facility is that they believe that the sale is, quote, imminent, at least according to people inside of that building. All right. Let's get to my Maryland-West Virginia game take.
Kevin's take. The good, the bad, the ugly from yesterday's Washington football team game. Here's Kevin.
All right. This blow by. There's the tuck. Jameer Reese delivers it. How good was Juju Reese down the stretch of that basketball game? He put his fist and stamp on the game, especially when their big guy fouled out. Once Bell fouled out and he was in foul trouble the whole way, great job by Dante to get him fouled out. It was all Juju Reese down the stretch. All right, look, if you missed this game yesterday, this really was a total fist fight from the opening tip. West Virginia came out. They bullied the Terps in the first 10 minutes of the game. They took a 13-point lead, 19-6. It was 13-4. The Terps had 4 points 10 minutes into the game. They went on a 7-minute scoring drought. Why? Because West Virginia took them out of everything that they wanted to run and kept turning Maryland over. I'll get to that on the list of things that I didn't like. But Maryland bounced back, you know, came off the ropes and started swinging wildly. And they took a 2-point lead at the break. Second half, it was literally like an all-out assault on one another. Big-time runs, physical basketball. Maryland goes up 7. West Virginia answers with 16 unanswered to go up 9. Then Maryland comes back. They take a 5-point lead, and then West Virginia cuts into that and had a running 3 at the buzzer to win the game, and it was just barely off. And that game ended, and both teams looked exhausted. 67-65 Maryland. The game lasted 2.5 hours. There were 43 fouls, 38 free throw attempts, 13 steals, 7 block shots. It's weird, these NCAA tournament games that are played that way, especially when they are the first game of the day, 11:15 a.m. Birmingham time, is you had a very sterile environment, which you see a lot of times in these, you know, these neutral site NCAA tournament, you know, games, especially early in the day on Thursday and Friday. But the game did not match what the crowd was. It was super intense start to finish. It was honestly the kind of game I love to watch. And it's one of the reasons that from afar, I've always enjoyed watching Huggins teams, because they turn every game they play into an absolute mess. But it's a beautiful mess to me. And Maryland answered. They answered consistently with their own brand of toughness and shot making, and it was really incredible to watch. The list of things that I liked. I'll start with Julian Juju Reese. He's the most improved player, not only on the team, I think you could say he's the most improved player in the Big Ten this year. This was a guy that we knew coming out of Baltimore had a ton of talent. And we saw it occasionally last year. And we saw it occasionally early in the season, but we saw many uglier moments from Reese earlier in the season as he tried to figure the game out. And Willard kept saying, look, this is for all intents and purposes after the wild year of last year, this is his freshman year. It's going to take time. Willard told me before the season, he said, this guy's going to be a double-double guy in the Big Ten. Mark my words. I mean, he is that good. And he's turned into that good. 37 minutes, stayed out of foul trouble, 17 points, 9 rebounds, 4 offensive rebounds, 6-9 from the floor. He's got to work on his free throw shooting. It is an ugly, flat stroke. He made 5 of 10, had 3 block shots in the game, had a bunch of turnovers early in the game, but he was a force down the stretch, especially, as I mentioned, when Jimmy Bell, their 6'10", 290-pound, you know, big man, fouled out, and he only played 11 minutes in the game. He was in foul trouble from the start. Look, Maryland had foul trouble as well. Jameer Young was on the bench for many minutes in the second half when he got his fourth, which was something that completely went over the head of the broadcast team of Nance, Raftery, and Hill. They didn't pick up that he was back into the game until 2 minutes after he was in the game. Julian Reese, to me, the star of the game. But Dante Scott, for me, was a close second. In the first half, when they were down and they were struggling, Dante got buckets. Dante settled them down. His defense was outstanding throughout. Their defense, by the way, on their star, West Virginia star, Eric Stevenson, was so good that Huggins benched him to start the second half. He finished 4-for-17, 9 points in the game, their star scoring player. By the way, Martinez did a phenomenal job on Stevenson. They helped. They bottled him up. It was the defense in the first half on the list of things that I liked that really kept Maryland in the game when they were down 13. It could have been a lot worse. Dante Scott continues to do things that not everybody recognizes when he isn't shooting the ball well, and he was 4-for-7 yesterday, had a couple of real good back-down post-up moves, an up-and-under, couple of jump hooks, ended up with 11 points, 8 rebounds, 2 steals. Just one turnover, by the way. I thought Hakeem Hart was outstanding yesterday. It's funny, but there's and I would never have guessed this, and nobody's watched more of every game than me, probably, and a few of you out there. But there's basically a stat that says if Hart gets into double figures, the Terps win. He's a very important player, don't get me wrong. But I don't know, that seems to be as much sort of coincidence as anything else. But he had 15 points, 4 assists, 3 rebounds. His length, his ability to guard almost any position, his ability to shoot the 3 and post. By the way, he's an excellent passer. So is Scott, by the way. He had 15. Don Carey got in foul trouble a little bit early on. He had a couple of big threes, though, that were really huge in the game. And Patrick Emelian for this team all year long has been a glue guy, an off-the-bench guy, a high IQ player. And he had a shot that he knocked down at the end of a shot clock as the clock was winding down. He didn't want to take it, but he took it anyway, knocked it down. And Ian Martinez didn't score yesterday, but his defense, especially on Stevenson in the first half, was outstanding. The Terps' overall fight in this game against a team that basically that is their MO. They're going to come out and turn every game they play into a fracas, into a total brawl. Maryland answered. 8 years ago in the second round in Columbus, they didn't answer. They got punked. They got bullied out of the tournament. Now, Melo Trimble got hurt in that game, and that was a big, big, you know, turning point. He was concussed and knocked out. I was surprised that there weren't more people knocked out in this game. West Virginia had one of their players, Matthews, knocked out on a screen. There were vicious screens in this game. Reese set some incredible screens. So did Scott. Really good job overall by the Terps. Excellent job by Kevin Willard, too. Have to mention him on the things of on the list of things that I liked, because that team all year long has gotten into a bind early in games, especially away from home. And they're used to it. And Tracy Wolfson interviewed him at the end of the second TV timeout when they were down 13-4 and they hadn't scored at that point in like 6 minutes. And he said, look, we've been here before. We were, you know, this was what it was at Purdue and at Michigan State. And we've been here and I'm looking up at the scoreboard and we're only down 9. Feels like it should be worse. We feel pretty good about where we are. I've heard him say that before. This time, though, the way West Virginia came out and really, really physically dominated Maryland over the first 10 minutes, I was concerned. Denton, how concerned were you early?
When they went on an 8-minute scoreless drought, I was kind of worried. And then when they gave up a 16, I mean, they have to be the first team to ever go scoreless for 8 minutes in one half, give up a 16-0 run in another half, and still end up winning the game.
The 16-0 run we're going to get to in a moment, because something sparked that really bothered me and a lot of Maryland fans. But overall, there's a lot to like from that win. And getting a win over that team, that's just a better 8-9 matchup for them yesterday to get a win over, you know, I'm not going to call West Virginia a rival by any stretch, but there's a lot of overlapping, and that campus in Morgantown is only about 3.5 hours away from College Park, and there have been some football wars over the years between the two programs. And, you know, Maryland's a basketball school. West Virginia is more of a football-first school, although they love their hoops in West Virginia. That was big for the Terps. Big win for them. All right, the list of things that I did not like from the game. The start that we've talked about, and really, they couldn't protect the basketball. They couldn't protect the ball, and they couldn't rebound. They got their dribble handoffs blown up. They got their double teamed. They got double teamed on their post-ups, turned it over. They had 6 turnovers in the first 10 minutes and 4 points. You know, here's the deal in basketball. If you don't get shots up, you're not going to score. It's impossible to score if you don't shoot. And for a while, Maryland didn't even get shots up because they were turning it over so frequently and so quickly. What carried them during that stretch is they got stops on the other end. But they gave up too many offensive rebounds. In the game, they gave up 16 offensive rebounds. Now, it calmed down a little bit at the end because Juju really took over. But they gave up too many offensive rebounds. That's on the list of things that I didn't like. The free throw shooting, they missed 4 out of their final 7 attempts. If they could have knocked down some free throws, including Jameer Young's last free throw, which gave West Virginia a chance to win the game on a 3-pointer. I'll ask Kevin Willard, too, by the way. Remind me. I'll ask Kevin Willard if Jameer had made that, if they would have fouled in that spot up 3. There wasn't a lot of time left, but I wonder if he would have fouled in that spot. On the list of after free throw shooting, they were 15 of 22 overall and missed 4 out of their last 7 attempts. On the officiating in the game, look, that's a hard game to officiate. I understand that. If you were to blow the whistle on every single violation because there were travels that weren't called, there were carries that weren't called, there were lots of fouls, and 43 of them were called, but there were lots of fouls that weren't called. If you called everything in that game honestly would have lasted 3.5 hours. It already lasted 2.5. And so it's a hard game to officiate. I would imagine just officiating West Virginia games in general tend to be difficult. But on the list of things that I didn't like was a replay review when Maryland had jumped out to a 7-point lead early in the second half before the first TV timeout. And I they were reviewing apparently a Dante Scott screen where there was literally not even that much contact, one of the only screens without contact or a lot of it in the game. And it was a five-minute review. 5 minutes. And it was like, what are you reviewing? Did you just show up to this basketball game? People were throwing each other around in the first half, physically picking people up and tossing them in the first half, and we didn't get a replay. And in the second half, we're going to replay a slip screen? Are you kidding me? 5 minutes, 38-31 Maryland. They come out of that, and all of the steam from not only the game, but Maryland's momentum, I thought anyway, was really in trouble. I was infuriated during that stretch. And sure enough, West Virginia comes out after that five-minute delay. They're able to regroup. They're on the ropes to start the second half. The Terps have, you know, erased a 13-point first-half deficit, and now they're up seven. They're up seven. And by the way, this was like 2 or 3 minutes into the second half. And at that point, Kedrian Johnson for West Virginia goes drive, score, foul, three-point play, okay? Next possession, drive, foul, three-point play. It's 38-37. He has scored 6 straight points. Next possession, Johnson, three-pointer, fouled, four-point play. The dude scored 10 straight points. We're not even at the first under-16 TV timeout. That took the wind, I thought, out of the sails. I'll ask Willard about it. But I thought that that was really a rough moment for the Terps. Nothing was called after 5 minutes, nor should anything have been called. They should have been able to see that in 30 seconds. 5 minute delay. Johnson goes on a 10-0 run. It ends, by the way, with Johnson making a three. So he scored 13 of their 16 points to go from down 38-31 to up 47-38 in 3 minutes. Then Maryland came back. But man, that was a bad, bad review. By the way, so was the review with 47 seconds to go on the Jameer Young turnover. I don't know how they didn't see that that ball didn't touch a West Virginia defender. Maryland got lucky on that. Now, West Virginia didn't get hurt by it. The Terps were up three, and Jameer Young turned it over again. And so you ended up with West Virginia scoring to get it to 66-65 on the next possession. Anyway, I mean, Maryland was able to burn some timeouts. By the way, that was also that moment where Dante Scott had that missed shot, but then got his offensive rebound, which was huge because they were able to burn some clock on that next possession. But that was, you know, that's the list of things overall I didn't like. I'm just going to mention a couple of other things, and I alluded to it earlier. It had to do with the broadcast of the game and Jim Nantz, Bill Raftery, Grant Hill in particular. I'll get to that when we come back. 7 a.m., Kevin Willard jumps on with us in 10 minutes. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980.
Likely on Kansas City. Here we go for the win. Got it, but there's a flag down. There's a flag down as everybody's running out onto the field, but there's a penalty marker.
Offside. Defense number 26.
And they call it on the defense.
Man, don't get too excited, Al Michaels, in the Jacksonville playoff game, that wild comeback after they were down 27-7 at halftime against the Chargers. Listening to Jim Nantz and Bill Raftery and Grant Hill call the Maryland-West Virginia game yesterday, this is Nantz's swan song, by the way, in the NCAA tournament. I think he'll just do golf from this point forward. And let me just mention, I'm a big Jim Nantz fan, always have been. I think he's one of the best to ever do it. That was one of the lowest energy broadcasts for a game that was that intense that I've heard since the Michaels Tony Dungy call of the Jacksonville comeback in the playoff game. And, you know, we came in here the next day, and Al Michaels is one of my all-time favorites. He's one of my favorite interviews that I ever did. I'll never forget it. It was before the Cowboys Sunday night game in 2012 We're sitting in the booth because I was doing the pregame show. Michaels walks in, and the producer says, "You got 5 minutes." 30 minutes later, Michaels and I were still talking on the pregame show. He was great, and it was so much fun, and I was always a big fan. But, you know, he clearly has lost his fastball. You know, I don't know if it's the sterile environment that they were in yesterday because it's 11:15 a.m. You got basketball. You got, you know, maybe a half-filled arena. I don't know if it's the fact that Grant Hill is just absolutely he's just not any good. I mean, he's so boring. He's so vanilla. And Raftery, I mean, his best days are way behind him. It was it sounded really like they had no idea. Grant Hill was putting golf balls, all right, for a promotion for the Masters as the game was reaching its apex, like one of the most intense portions of the game in the second half. And they're laughing and yucking it up as the game's going on. That was the most excited they got the entire day. I mean, Kevin Harlan, and I'm not the biggest Harlan fan. You would have felt that game. Brad Nessler, you would have felt that game. I was watching games all day yesterday, and the crews, like, I thought Brendan Haywood was excellent with Brad Nessler. I thought Kevin Harlan, Bonner, you know, Harlan, you know, be careful with Harlan, right? Because it's like, there's Juju Reese with the dunk and the Terps have an 8-6 lead. I mean, you get that all game long, but at least there's a level of energy. Ian Eagle, Spanarkle, you can't beat that. We're going to have to live with Nance and Raftery right through the Final Four National Championship game one last time. Who's going to be the number one next year? Is it going to be Harlan or Eagle?
I believe it's going to be Eagle.
I'm fine with that. I mean, Ian Eagle's as good as it gets. Brad Nessler's as good as it gets. Brendan Haywood is, I think, a really good analyst, an excellent analyst. In the game, one of the games he was calling, and I forget which game it was, he was talking about, he's calling the Northwestern game, when I was watching the Northwestern game against Boise. And, you know, Chris Collins is the coach at Northwestern. His father, Doug Collins, is in the crowd. And Brendan Haywood's talking about when he played for Doug Collins here. And he said, you know, he called me into my office, and at one point in the conversation, Brendan said, "Doug, did you ever play?" Doug Collins, for those that don't know, was the number one pick in the NBA draft back in 1974, I think, and was an Olympian on that 72 Olympic team that lost to the Russians in despicable fashion, in cheating fashion. Doug Collins was an excellent NBA player. But anyway, Nessler, Haywood, I liked. This game, I almost wanted to turn the sound down. But, you know, because the crowd isn't there and it's that weird environment, you could hear, you know, the players yelling. You could hear the coaches yelling. And again, I'll give them a pass if it was just the environment they were in and maybe they just couldn't feel how intense and how physical that game was. But watching it on TV, man, the announcing did not match what I was watching. Bama's next. Got to defend. You got to get stops and you got to get rebounds. And then, by the way, you got to shoot the ball pretty well, too. They're only 7.5-point dogs, though. All right, Kevin Willard next. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. Audacy. Download it today.